Hello, 13th jurors, and thank you for reporting to jury duty. Brandi Churchwell here, and I have the latest in your trial update for South Carolina versus Rita Pangalangan and Larry King. This is Christina's story. We left off on the last episode with the state resting their case. So now it's the defense. Now, this works a little bit different because there are two defendants with two separate attorneys. So the way that they did it on this one is that Larry King goes first. Now, as a shock to everybody, Larry King has decided to testify on his own behalf. He takes a stand, and the first thing that he does is speak to the jury and say, "How y'all doing?" His attorney immediately stops him because obviously that's not allowed and has to remind him, "No, sir, you don't get to talk. You just answer questions." So he says his name. He talks a little bit about his family. He said he's originally from Walterboro, and he said that he's 46 years old. He has a couple of kids in their 20s, and he has a four-year-old grandson. Talks a little bit about where he's working and says that he's only had five jobs in his whole life, that he's always worked and he's worked long-term jobs. Now, one of the main things that keeps coming up in this trial is that methamphetamine was in the system of not only Larry, but also Rita. So his attorney asks him about this.
So they've talked about this methamphetamine. Have you ever used methamphetamine, sir?
Yes, sir, I have.
Okay. Do you have a in the past, have you had a problem with methamphetamine?
I did.
And what do you mean? How did you define a problem?
I was a drug addict.
You were addicted to methamphetamine. Is that what you
tell me? I was addicted to methamphetamine.
Okay. And early on, during the selection of this jury, one of the jurors said they knew you and stood up and said they were in a 12. I guess they missed the anonymous part about Narcotics Anonymous.
Absolutely.
But one of them stood up and said they knew you from the 12-step program. Do you recall?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Have you, in the past, struggled with your addiction? Have you sought help? Have you tried to get help?
I did. And the last 2 years, I moved to Spartanburg and in a recovery, a Christian recovery-based center, and been in a program up there, and I've worked and lived in a recovery house, you know, with other clean guys that were trying to, you know, just been where I've been and trying to put the Lord first and do the next right thing.
Now, look, recovery from addiction is a huge, huge deal. And I truly hope that for Larry's sake and the sake of his kids and his grandchild and whoever loves him, I hope that he's able to keep this up. If you're struggling with addiction, you can get help. There is 1-800-662-HELP. That's the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Or if you go to www.na.org, there's also a place where you can do a meeting search and find NA meetings in your area. Had to throw that in there. So back to Larry. He tells us that he was a functioning addict. He actually used it to work, drive. He would use it to meet just regular, normal, everyday obligations. He talked about his relationship with Rita. He said that they dated for a few years. They broke up for about 6 months and then started talking again about 5 weeks before Christina's death. His attorney asks Larry, "Have you ever witnessed Rita with Christina and had any cause for concern?" And he said, "I've witnessed them together plenty and I've never had cause for concern." And he says he loves kids. If he ever saw anyone abusing a child in any way, he would stop it. Now, he says he loves kids, but his attorney sure does want to make it a point that he wasn't attached to this one.
What was your relationship with this child?
She was just my girlfriend's daughter.
Did you, this is a child who had special needs and needed special care. Did you wash this child? Did you bathe this child? Somebody did you?
No, sir.
And it's tough, but this child was in a diaper. This young girl wore a diaper and wasn't able to clean herself. Did you clean this child? Did you change your diaper? Were you responsible for things like that?
No, sir.
Did you feed this child?
No, sir.
Did you put her to bed or get her up in the morning?
No, sir.
Were you financially responsible? Did you pay any child support or anything for this child?
No, sir.
And this may have been answered, but was she your daughter biologically or anything like that?
No, sir.
Okay.
So in case you missed that very first question, when he asked what his relationship was to Christina, he said it was just his girlfriend's daughter. Now, keep in mind, he and Rita dated for years. They broke up for 6 months and had just started talking again about 5 weeks before this, but they dated for years. And there's pictures on her Facebook of him lying on the couch with Christina lying with him. So it wasn't just his girlfriend's daughter. And even if it was, you still have a responsibility to take care of a child who isn't being taken care of if you have the opportunity to get them out of harm's way. I think the attorney is possibly losing the jury with this line of questioning. So we finally get into the details of what happened that night. Now, to truly understand it, we have to go back to the babysitter story. Remember when she said that she had gone over there on a Friday night and the plan was for her to watch Christina and it was going to be her first time watching her and she was supposed to watch her while Rita went on a date with Larry? Well, that was Friday night and she didn't come back home until Sunday. So on Sunday, when she showed back up around 5 or 6 that afternoon or evening, she ended up taking Christina back to Larry's house where she had been and she stayed there overnight with Larry. Larry says on the stand that he had been up all night. He never actually went to sleep. And the next morning, that's when he had his conversation with Rita about her infidelity. And he said that he was hurt and he just wanted her to leave. He told her that he would call her later, but he didn't want her there in the moment. He said that he carried Christina out and he put her in the car because Rita had medical issues and it was hard for her to carry Christina. He said he would never place her in the car without the air running. Even with hurt feelings over Rita, he would never do that to Christina. He said that they talked, and then they ended up going into the house and making up. And then Rita went to leave and said that her keys were locked in the car. Now, let's look at the timeline. If he asked her to leave and then went and put Christina in the car at 11:16, they talked, they made up, and then she came back outside and realized that the keys were locked in the car, that's still almost 4 hours. It was 11:16 a.m. until 3:03 p.m. before they actually went out there and the keys were locked in the car. He says that he offered to knock out the sunroof, but it was Rita's car. Now, in this moment, he wasn't allowed to give an answer about what Rita said to him about whether or not he should knock out that sunroof, but it was clear by his answers and the way he skirted around it that his story is that she didn't want him to knock out the sunroof. He says that she came up with the idea instead to go to her house and get the extra key fob. Now, he says that the engine was running and that it was running when he got back, and he thought the AC was on. Now, again, the attorney with this whole not my kid, not my problem approach has a comment in this moment that is infuriating, but I think it's important to hear.
I went and took her to get another spare key.
Okay. And when you left, was the engine running?
Yes, sir.
And was it running when you got back?
Yes, sir.
And did you think that AC was on?
Yes, sir.
When you got back and you had that key fob, were you able to pop the and just pull up with the key? That solved the problem. Did you pull up, hit the fob, and unlock the door?
No, sir.
Why not?
I think the batteries were weak in it. It wasn't working. Okay. It wouldn't unlock the door.
So y'all hit it, unlocked, yeah. Unlocked, and it wouldn't unlock it?
Yes, sir.
Had a real problem now, or at least she had a real problem. Is that fair?
Yes, sir.
Now, when I watched this in real time, I actually had to rewind it and watch it again to make sure that I actually heard what he said, because I thought there's no possible way that attorney just said that. But he did. He literally said, y'all had a problem. Well, I guess she had a problem. Incredible. Larry said that he believes that the key fob had a low battery, so he called the locksmith and had the locksmith walk him through what to do. He told him how to pop the top off of the key fob and that it has an actual key in there and that can be used to open the door. So Larry said that that's what he did. And as soon as he opened the door, he saw Christina and he says he called 911 immediately. His attorney asks him, was there ever a point when you thought you were going to be in trouble or that you would need to cover something up? And he says no. His attorney asks about the windows being tinted very dark and that you can't really see inside of there. He asks, finally, did you murder her? And Larry says, no. He said, would you cause harm to any child? And he said, no, I love children. Now, again, the attorney is pushing all the buttons, and he makes a comment here about the conspiracy charges, which he's been very clear that he doesn't think should be there. And Judge Newman corrected him in a heartbeat.
And for some ungodly reason, I have no idea still, you're charged with conspiracy. You're aware of that.
Jury is disregard the comment of counsel. Close questions.
Thank you. You're also charged with conspiracy. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Again, I had to rewind when I was watching this in real time and make sure that he said what I thought he said, and he sure did. He said, for some ungodly reason, and I have no idea still why, you're charged with conspiracy. And Judge Newman said, the jury will disregard that comment. Shame on him. So now it's time for cross-examination. And y'all, this is one of my favorite parts of a trial, when there is a cross-examination of a prosecutor asking questions to a defendant who took the stand in their own defense. The reason why I love this so much is because the prosecutors spend months, sometimes years, going over every single detail from this case file. They have investigators, and they look at every detail, and they go through everything that they possibly can, trying to find every little bit of evidence and proof to show that the person that they're going after is the person who deserves to be in jail for whatever crime this is. Now, when a defendant takes the stand, there's generally a defense that they have presented, and a lot of times just the defense is, you know, what me with some other guy. Sometimes it's self-defense, sometimes it's whatever. In this case, his defense is that he believes the air conditioner was on, it wasn't his kid, and he didn't do anything wrong. But Duffy Stone gets up there and he comes out swinging.
Let me make sure I understand your testimony, and I guess this is either based on your memory of the event or your comprehension of the event at the time, right? Your testimony today? You haven't looked at the video, you haven't done anything. This is either from your memory of what happened or from your comprehension of that while it was happening. Is that fair?
Yes, sir.
You would agree that everything that was done to that child was done with you and Rita. Is that fair?
Yes, sir.
You put the child in the car, Rita was standing there when you did, correct?
Yes, sir.
You were standing around the car with Rita when the child was inside the car, correct?
Yes.
You went inside the
car. Ask the witness to be allowed to answer.
He did. You went inside with Rita inside the front porch together, did you not?
We did.
Pardon me?
I did.
And while you were in there, the child was still out in the car, correct?
She was.
Now, is it fair to say, and I know we've had some testimony, it was a pretty hot day, it's in August. Your house, correct?
Yes, sir.
Now look, the reason that the audio is kind of up and down on that is because I want y'all to picture this. Duffy Stone is pacing back and forth. He is excited. He has adrenaline going, and he cannot wait to fire off these questions. Larry's attorney actually objects at one point and says to let him answer the question. Duffy did not miss a beat. He said, oh, he answered, and he fired another question immediately. He was ready for this. One of the main points that he made, though, was every decision that was being made between Rita and Larry. He was an active participant in all of the things happening at his home. So all of the stuff about how not his kid, not his problem, Duffy Stone kind of just threw all that out the window. Now, he brings up the timeline, and he says, you were with Rita starting that Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday. Sunday she left for a little bit and then came back with her. He's recounting the story that Miss Honeycutt told about how she was babysitting on Friday night and Rita never came home. So he brings up this timeline and he says, this is about the same time that you were on a meth bender, using constantly, right? Hadn't slept in a couple days. He also asks about Rita and her meth use. Larry said that he does not recall whether or not Rita was using, and Duffy Stone ain't having that. He said, oh, so that's the story you're going to stick with? Things continue to heat up, and they kind of escalate, and Larry actually gets loud with Duffy Stone right here.
You are doing meth all three of those days when you're staying up. Rita doing that with you?
I don't recall.
You sure?
Yes, sir.
You going to stick with that?
Your Honor, that's the answer. That's the problem.
Yes, sir, I'll rephrase it. Did you not tell law enforcement that Rita, in fact, likes to put her meth in her coffee and drinks it that way? Did you not tell them that?
Maybe I did.
May have mentioned that. Okay. She's with you the entire time on this three-day bender. You're using meth.
your testimony, you don't remember if she was using it or not, but you know that when she does use it, she puts it in her coffee? But that's your testimony?
I speak for myself, sir.
Well, unfortunately, you answered my question, sir. So my question was, when you're doing the meth, is Rita doing it with you?
She was using.
Thank you, sir.
Can you back up, please? I'll get to that.
Now, I want y'all to picture what's happening in this courtroom right now because it is getting tense. You have Larry up on the stand, madder than a puff toad. You have Duffy Stone, who is still pacing around, and adrenaline's rushing, and he is firing off questions, and he's, you know, letting him have it. And then you have Larry's attorney, and he is kind of leaned up against the prosecutor's table. He's got his arms folded in front of him, and he is just staring down Duffy Stone. I left that little bit of the clip in at the very end, if you heard it, where Duffy Stone walks back over to the prosecutor's table where Larry's attorney is actually standing there, and he tells him, "Can you back up, please?" Larry's attorney points to something behind them, and you can't see what it is because it's out of the shot of the camera, and Duffy said, "Oh, I'll get to that. I'm not even close yet." So Duffy moves on to his next points. He says all of the things that the expert said about increased libido and cognitive abilities, etc., all those things were true. So y'all were in there having sex while Christina was in the car. Now, I don't know what the proper response to that question would have been, but the one he gave was not what I was expecting, because as Duffy Stone is pointing those things out and he says, "All the time while you're in there getting it on with Mama, Christina's sitting in the car," and his response was, "With the air conditioning running." Next, Duffy Stone brings up the 911 call, and he pulls up the transcripts for it. He asks Larry about it because he says Larry told the 911 dispatcher that Christina had been in the car for 1, maybe 2 hours. He asks him, "Was that meth, or were you just trying to minimize it?" And Larry said, "I had no idea, sir." He also asked Larry about a comment that he made during his testimony where he says that he had reached into the car and pressed the button to turn the car off. So remember how Larry said that he had not watched that surveillance video yet and he didn't watch it in preparation for the trial? Well, Duffy Stone wanted him to see it. So he pulls it out and he perches himself up right there beside Larry and they watch the video together. So remember, Larry's testimony is that when he put Christina in the car was already turned on. So he says that Rita had turned the car on. So as they're watching this video, Duffy Stone points out to him, not one time did anybody ever come out before Christina was put in the car to turn that car on. Also, there is no video evidence showing anywhere when he reached in to turn the car off. So both of his versions of the story with the air conditioner or the car being on are debunked by this video evidence. There's still a lot of tension going on right now, and you can tell that as Duffy Stone is picking holes in his story and showing that his story couldn't possibly be true, you can visibly see his breath is getting deeper. He is looking frustrated. He's crossing his arms, kind of like letting them rest on his lap, but he is kind of hunched over a little bit. And while he got on the stand and was holding his shoulders up and was, you know, seeming like he was okay, you can tell in this moment that he is pretty defeated. Rita's attorney also has an opportunity to do a cross-examination of the defendant, and there's not a whole lot that comes out of it. He says stuff about how the video shows Rita coming out, and he's basically saying that when she came and sat in the car at that period around 12:30, that she could have been looking at the gauges and making sure that the air was running or whatever. But again, we've already seen that nobody turned the car on. The other thing that he points out is the 911 call. He says that Larry's first response was, "Oh my God." And then he said, "I just locked my daughter in the car and I had to go to my girlfriend's house to get the key fob." Now, I find this part real interesting too, because remember that whole thing about not my kid, not my problem. But now he's on the phone with 911 saying he locked his daughter in the car. Just throwing that out there. The other thing that Rita's attorney wanted to make sure he got in there was that Larry had said that Rita loved Christina. That was his statement then, it's his statement now, and that Rita would never want Christina to die in any way, shape, or form. And with that, the defense for Larry rests. So the state has rested, Larry has rested, and now the only thing that's left is Rita's defense. Now, originally, Rita says that she is going to take the stand in her own defense. But I think after she saw how Larry's testimony went, and especially the cross-examination, she backed out on that and changed her mind. First up is Robert Erebus. He is the locksmith that Larry called when the keys were locked in the car. Robert says that he knows Larry, and when Larry called him, he did not sound like himself. He said that he sounded frustrated, and he was trying to explain to him what to do, and he told him, just use a brick and break the window. He started to say that he heard a female voice say something, but there was a hearsay objection that stopped him from saying what it was, and the rest of this time was kind of spent tiptoeing around all of that. He did say that there was somebody in his shop at the time that he talked to, and this is what he had to say about that.
I knew there was an emergency involved because of, well, I'm not being allowed to say what I overheard on the conversation. So I said to a friend customer, who's a friend of mine outside of business, and another customer, because I'm right there on Jeffries, you're about to see more fire trucks, ambulances, police cars than you've ever seen in your life come flying by here at maybe 90 miles an hour, any moment now. And I would say within 4 or 5 minutes of that, every fire truck, EMS, police car, and it weren't even doing 70, they were doing like more like 90. This is 35 out there, you know when somebody's speeding. They asked me what happened, and I told them pretty much everything here, because one of them knew Larry.
You knew something shocking had happened.
Oh, I'm certain.
I reached out to Robert and asked him if he could tell us what it was that he wasn't allowed to say in court. He said he appreciated it, but he had no comment at this time. The defense now calls witness Nancy Benton Carter to the stand. Now, she was a co-worker of Rita, and she's basically here as a character witness. But I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all something. Miss Nancy seems like she is as sweet as she could be. And she describes Rita in a very positive light, but she worked with her 18 years before this happened. So I'm not really sure why they couldn't have found character witnesses from closer to the time that this happened, but you get what you get and you don't pitch a fit. So Miss Nancy's here and she is telling the jury that Rita was reliable and dependable and helpful. If she or any of the other teachers needed help, that Rita would just jump right in. She said that after Christina's death, Rita seemed like she was really upset and distraught. One thing to make note of, too, is that it had actually been so long since she had spent time with Rita or seen her that she didn't even actually know Christina. So she doesn't know anything about Rita's relationship with Christina other than what she sees on Facebook, she says. And she said that according to Facebook, it looked like they had a really loving, caring relationship. Two things here. Number one, do not ever think that you know about somebody's relationship based on what you see on Facebook. Number two, I have been on her Facebook, and there are a lot of pictures of Christina. That part is true. But there's also a lot of stuff on there that's pretty messy. So I don't think that her Facebook is the best character witness example in this situation. Cross-examination from the state is pretty much what you'd expect here. It's just pointing out that this was 18 years ago that she knew her. It was 18 years ago that she was reliable and dependable and helpful. They asked if she knew anything about Rita's methamphetamine use or had seen her on methamphetamine, and of course, Miss Nancy said no. All right, y'all, we are down to the last two witnesses. So defense calls Captain Jason Chapman back to the stand. Now, Rita's attorney, Mr. Phillips, gets up to question him, and the first thing that he starts to talk to him about is the testimony that he had given where he's saying that the lights will not flash if you use the key fob if the car is on. The first time that Captain Chapman was on the stand, this was a big point of contention. This is kind of when they got frustrated with each other, and Mr. Phillips kept asking him the same question over and over about when they were testing the car and testing to see if the lights would flash on while the car was on. And he made a comment about, how many times do I have to answer you? So this is something that they've already been mad at each other about before. So as Mr. Phillips is trying to have this gotcha moment, Captain Chapman is not being fazed. He's not getting rattled because he knows his stuff. He knows exactly what he was talking about, exactly what was said. He knows that he was specific about it, and he knows that he even has everything on a recording that was given to the prosecution. So he talks about how the patterns of lights flashing are different. So that was the text of the conversation. So he's trying to explain this to Mr. Phillips, and Mr. Phillips wants to kind of cut him off, and he's wanting the jury to hopefully question what he said about this, because remember, their whole defense rests on whether or not the air conditioner was turned on. But Captain Chapman is not having it. He tells him, you can't ask me a question out of context and then not let me answer.
And this is where you said, look, the lights are flashing.
Sure.
The lights won't flash if the vehicle's running. So he hands the key fob, gets handed to Larry. Larry's fumbling around with the key fob, hitting all the buttons there, or maybe, maybe not.
Sure.
You'll fight with me on that. And then there's the lights flashing. You're saying there's no way those lights will flash like that if the car's running.
Now, right there is not the same point in time that Solicitor Stone and I discussed.
Oh, we'll get to it. And I got
that. Are you, hold on. No, you can't ask me something and run off from me. Do you want me to answer that question?
Go for it.
All right. Right there, those lights are not flashing in response to pushing the lock or unlock button. They're flashing in response to pushing the panic button on the side of the key fob. The difference is the style of flash and the pattern.
This goes back and forth a little bit as they continue debating.
And that's what you told this jury? Because I'm going to pull the video up if you testify.
No one asked me that question.
Okay.
We were talking in regards to lock and unlock, and I encourage you to pull the video up because I'm very confident in what I said.
Okay.
He also has these moments where he's basically narrating things and he's trying to say what Chapman said on the stand before. And it gets to the point where Judge Newman even has to step in and tell him, you have to stop narrating. You need to ask questions. You are a lawyer. You ask questions. He answers. You don't get to just get up there and talk. During cross-examination, they clear up any confusion about his testimony that's being taken out of context. He says this is simply just about the flashing lights pattern. It cannot be replicated through testing when hitting the lock or unlock button while the car is running. Then there's one more bomb that drops, and it's not something that I had heard them say before.
When y'all got to the scene, was the air conditioner on the car running? Was the car on?
The car was on. The air conditioner was running, and the air conditioner was cold.
Because there was testimony earlier that one of the defendants in this case, specifically Mr. King, had reached in and turned the car off. When y'all got there, was the car running or off?
The vehicle was running. The air conditioner was cut on. The ambient temperature inside the car was not cold, but the air conditioner was blowing cold air.
All right, let me back up for a second. So the car's running, the air's blowing cold, but the car is hot.
That's correct.
Like maybe it was just turned on.
So this is a huge deal. If they arrived and the car had the air conditioning on and it was blowing cold, then that means that they thought about this afterwards and turned the car on and the air conditioning was functioning properly. If the air conditioning was functioning properly, then there's no way that they could have had it on while she was in the car. I think that the defense was hoping that this would be a gotcha moment, but they just kind of keep shooting themselves in the foot. The final witness of the trial is Rita's daughter, Elizabeth Clyde. Rita had another daughter named Ashley who was arrested in a Walmart parking lot 1 week after she was arrested for Christina's murder. And Ashley was actually arrested for, big surprise, leaving her kids in a hot car in the parking lot. So this is not that daughter. They thought better than to bring her on the stand. This is the other daughter. Her name is Elizabeth Clyde, and she gets on the stand and says that her mom had trouble getting pregnant again after she was born, so Christina was a miracle. She said that her mom was loving and caring, that she was a role model for her, and she is the reason that Elizabeth became a teacher. She said that she would raid her mom's closet and her pantry, and she talked about what a great mom she was. They finally get around to talking about Christina, and she said that Christina, well, how do I exactly describe how she talked about Christina? It was a very strange testimony. Now, I try to give as much grace as possible to victims and victims' families, but this testimony about her sister especially was just kind of a little bit uncomfortable. She talks about how she took full advantage of the line cuttings at Disneyland because Christina would be treated like a princess there. She talks about how she wasn't photogenic and she had bad hair. It was just kind of strange. But she did say that her mom loved Christina so much and that she was bougie. And it was just not the testimony I think I was really expecting. One thing that also stood out, she said that she stole Christina's gummies and snacks and that she loved chocolate donuts. Now, this goes against everything that we heard about how Christina has a choking hazard, and that's the reason they didn't have any solid foods. You could tell that she didn't really understand what she was saying and that she was kind of outing the defense on their nonsense. And the attorney tries to get it back on track, and she doesn't really know what she's saying. So that whole, oh, she only eats or drinks, you know, Ensure stuff, kind of went out the window with her testimony.
She did have food for your sister?
Yes, I stole it often. I stole all her gummies and snacks. And one of the reasons why we got hardwood floors was so Christina could be independent and eat on her own. Like, she was able to take bites, very slow bites, and eat and feed herself. So often her favorite was chocolate donuts. So we would just let her have a chocolate donut while watching Dora, and she would make as big of a mess as she could because we would clean it up always.
And they had primarily Pediasure. Was her primary somewhat diet that she had?
Because she could swallow so little, that was a big portion of her like nutrients. But she ate chicken, she ate meat. It had to be like small bites. But for most of, because she had a thing where she would drool all the time, so she always got dehydrated. So Pediasure was her main hydration, not really her main source of like nutrients and food.
The defense also asked about Brittany Honeycutt. She's the one who lived with Rita just those few months right before Christina's death, and she's the one who said that Rita told her to just leave Christina in the car. So they asked about her, and she said that she had gone to visit her mom before, and Brittany's room wasn't clean. She said that she didn't stay living in the house long because her mom thought that she wasn't a good roommate, and it was hard to find someone to keep things clean, make rent payments on time. And then she says she thinks that there was some kind of drama about bringing her boyfriend in. She also said that after her mom and dad's divorce, a lot of people kind of went team dad, so Rita didn't have a lot of support. She said that she doesn't know anything about her mom ever leaving Christina in the car, which is strange because, remember, we've heard not only from Brittany Honeycutt that she said she did it all the time, but also her sister and Rita's other daughter was also locked up for it. Another thing to note, Elizabeth said that her mom doesn't do drugs and doesn't even really like alcohol. She said that the whole reason that her parents got divorced was because her dad was using drugs and Rita didn't want to have anything to do with it. Of course, we know that's not true because there was methamphetamine and amphetamine in her talk screen. All witnesses are now done and Rita's defense rests as well. It's now time to start closing arguments. So the way that this works is, since the state has the burden of proof, the state will go first, and then defense has their closing arguments, which in this case will have two separate closing arguments because we have two different defendants with two different attorneys. And then the state gets a chance at a kind of like a rebuttal, so they get the last say in it. So first up is Duffy Stone, and he does a great job pulling everything together. He points out to the jury that Christina was a child born with cerebral palsy, and she was totally dependent on others to feed her, give her water, keep her safe, and that she was totally dependent on her mom, Rita, to do these things for her. And this is every day, not just the good days, not just the days when Rita is sober, even on the days when Rita chooses to go get high on meth with her boyfriend. Now, neither her character witness friend from 18 years ago nor her daughter who came in to testify knew about the meth use, but we know that they were because their blood was taken and we've seen their talk screens. He reminds the jury of this and that the car was not on, there was no air conditioning, nobody was near that car, and we know this from the video. He says that the only reason that Larry said that the car was running is because that's what he feels like he needed to say in order to not get in trouble. He pulls out the chart that shows the heat and how the heat was rising inside of the car. Because remember, this was during the hottest time of the day in August. And he reminds the jury of this, and he shows them the temperature and the heat index of the cabin of the car as Christina was sitting inside. He also reminds them that both Larry and Rita are responsible for this. Larry put her in the car. Rita is the mom. But they were both there. They both did all of this together. They stayed inside. They left together. They equally responsible for Christina's death. In what was probably one of the most impactful moments for jury members, when Duffy Stone pulls up a picture of Christina and he says to the jury, okay, maybe she couldn't talk. She was nonverbal, but she had feelings and she had emotions. And he points out that when Rita had gone out to the car at 12:30, while Christina had been out there for about an hour and 15 minutes sitting in a hot car with no windows down, no air conditioner going, to picture the emotion on her face as she would have been looking at Rita. And he said, keep in mind that she would have sat in that car, seen Christina's face, and still made the decision to get back out of the car and leave her there. He reminds the jury that even after that, another hour and a half passes and they come back outside and they're on the porch and they still, in that moment, don't even go check on her. It's not until 3 o'clock, just after 3 o'clock, that they finally walk out to the car. That's the first time they've checked on her since then. He tells the jury that even when she finally went to the car in that moment, she wasn't getting in the car to go drive away or take care of her. She was going to get cigarettes. And he shows a picture that had a bag of the cigarettes and also a loaded 9mm handgun. The defense attorney objects to the gun being brought up, and he even asked for a mistrial over this later, but of course it's denied. He continues going over the timeline, and he points out that after they found out that she's locked in the car and they can't get in, they didn't break a window, they didn't bust into the sunroof, they didn't do anything. They sat on the front porch swing and they kind of took their time. He shows image stills from the video and he points out that 39 minutes after they found her, they're still at the house and they're kissing on the porch and they still haven't done anything to actually get her out. He reminds the jury that once they left to go get the other key fob, they were gone for 52 minutes. And when they pulled back up, they didn't come rushing out with the key fob hoping to go save her. They sat in the truck for another 4 minutes. He tells the jury, even when they finally got out, they're still hugging and kissing but haven't gotten her out of the car. He says after they finally do get Christina out, when Larry calls 911, he tells them that he had reached in and turned the car off. But he points out there's never any time when the car was turned on. He also points out that Rita's story to the police when they got there was that she had put Christina in the car, went inside to get cigarettes, and came back out and it was locked. Obviously, this was also a lie. He reminds them of the medical examiner's testimony and the damage that was done to Christina with the burns and her internal body temperature being so high. He tells them that she vomited into her own throat, defecated on herself, and was left there to cook in the car until she died. In a moment that causes outbursts from both defense attorneys, Duffy Stone tells the jury they could have walked up to Christina and shot her, and she would have suffered less pain. Larry's defense attorney is up next. He starts out by saying that Duffy Stone, in his closings, had said the phrase, quote, "they may have thought the air was on," end quote. He says that that makes murder go out the window. That's not really how this works, but that's what he's going with. He also said that Duffy had told the jury that Christina was totally dependent on Rita. And he focuses in on this and he says that's true. Her mom was responsible for her. He goes through the whole not my kid, not my problem theory, saying that he had no legal responsibility for Christina. He doesn't have much of a defense, honestly, so he basically just tells the jury that Larry is innocent until proven guilty. And he says Larry has nothing to prove during this whole process, that the burden of proof is on the state. He spends about the next 10 to 12 minutes talking about doubt. He says most of the testimony and everything that was presented to the jury was just clutter, because you can't look into Larry's heart and know what was going on. He also says that as much as the state talks about methamphetamine, they aren't charged with drugs, so that's just more clutter. He basically went through each witness and told the jury why those witnesses don't really matter. He then tells the jury how truthful Larry is, because he got up there and told the jury that he was an addict and told them about his addiction and being sober now, when he could have just gotten up there and said, oh no, that was my first time using. He also said the, quote, sum total, end quote, of what Larry did was just to walk Christina out and put her in the car. Then he says Larry relinquished all responsibility, and it then became the job of Christina's mother after that. Again, his whole defense, not my kid, not my problem. He makes a comparison and asks the jury if Larry had walked out with the child in his arms, put her in the car, talked to Rita for a second, and then turned around and left the property and went to a bar, that would make him not responsible. And he is basically saying it's the same thing. Although, it's not the same thing, because that's not what he did. Mr. Phillips gets up, and now it is time for defense's closing for Rita's attorney. That's Mr. Phillips. So he gets up and he tells the jury, look, I'm a parent. I get it. I can't watch the video without yelling, please break the window. But he tells the jury, you took a sworn oath, and you have to separate the emotion from the law. He says, you can be as angry as you want to at her, but you swore to give her a fair trial. He also says that the only reason that Captain Chapman told them today on the stand that the car was running and the air was blowing when they got there was just because they wanted this conviction so bad and they wanted to make the news. Wow. He says the only reason they showed the picture of the gun that was in the car is just to get them angry. He also says that the state knows that this is not murder, that they are adding on extra charges like the great bodily injury on a child because they know that it's not murder. He then does the whole innocent until proven guilty and burden of proof and all of that thing that all defense attorneys do. And then he does something that, I'm going to be honest, it really made me angry. Rita, who has decided not to take the stand, is called up by her attorney to come stand in front of the jury and cry while he talks about her.
We've been sitting over there in the corner. I had to bring her right here in front of you to look you in the eye. You heard from her daughter that she's a loving mother, that she was there for her family, that all this other stuff about dirty house and through all this stuff that they try to say is the murder from that video, they threw in all this other stuff. Bed bugs, dirty house. Her daughter, the one that's there, the one that's a teacher, the one that's part of the pastoral part ever, married to a pastor, all the people here in attendance saying exactly what you need to hear, right? That the lady, that you saw how she acted, that she didn't pay rent, that she brought her boyfriend and kids in there, was dirty, messed up the house, and she got kicked out. She had an axe to grind. But why present all that if this case isn't what it was supposed to be? The murder's on video is what they're trying to say. They're trying to say it's so open and shut. Then why are they adding all this other stuff in there? This is real. This is no high school debate. This is no round table discussion. This is this woman's life. This woman's freedom. And I'm not saying that she did everything right, because God knows, I already said she did. And you can be angry in here, agree, but you can't do it in there.
This infuriates me, honestly, because the way that he brings her up and parades her in front of the jury and has her stand up there and cry while he talks about her, it's basically his way of making her into the victim instead of Christina. I streamed this trial on YouTube, on my channel, and while he did this, it made me so angry. I had pulled up a picture of Christina and actually placed it on the screen over her because I wanted our viewers to remember that she is not the victim here. Christina is. Duffy Stone is back up for his rebuttal. And this is the final closing. This is the last thing other than the jury instructions that the jury will actually hear before they go make their decision. So he points out a few things that were brought up, and he says, okay, yeah, maybe they did think that the air conditioner was on. He said that. Maybe they did. But they were high, and voluntary intoxication is not a defense. He also says, there's nothing that you can see in any of the behavior on this day or in that video that shows that they cared or had any concern for Christina's life. He says, Larry wants a pass because it's not his child, which means he basically doesn't have any regard for human life. Then he says, look at Rita's behavior. Just 3 days before this happened, she abandoned Christina with a babysitter who had never kept her before. A babysitter who, by the way, didn't even know if there was a choking hazard if she ate solid food, because Rita didn't tell her. She just left her for 3 days. His final big point to the jury is, look, if you're a parent and something like this happens and your child is dead, you're not going to be just inside the house waiting when police get there. You would have to pry that child out of your hands. With that, it's time for the jury to get their jury instructions from Judge Newman. So let's take a look at the three charges. We have murder, great bodily injury or harm on a child, and criminal conspiracy. So he explains to the jury that each indictment is separate. So you'll have a separate decision for each one for each person. So there will be six decisions total. Now for murder, murder has to have malice intent. So malice can be hatred, ill will, or hostility toward another person, or it can be inferred. It can be inferred from disregard for human life or extreme recklessness of the lives of others. So in this case, they don't necessarily have to prove the malice as hatred or ill will toward Christina. The jury can infer malice if they believe that Rita and or Larry acted with complete or extreme recklessness of Christina's life or disregard for her life, as in leaving her in a hot car to die. The second charge is great bodily injury or harm on a child. So this is kind of a no-brainer, I think. You know, obviously we heard about the burns and the damage that was done to her, and that is directly a result from what they did. And then the third one is a little bit more complicated, and the jury actually asks for clarification during deliberations on this one because it's kind of worded a little bit weird. But basically, it means the defendants combined together for the purpose of committing an unlawful act or committing a lawful act by unlawful means. So they would have basically a mutual understanding or agreement or common intention or plan, and they must be guilty of knowledge and participation, which means you have to prove that they had not only knowledge of what was happening, but also participated in it. Now, the conspiracy one is a little bit trickier than the other two, and I think that the reason for that is it's not specific. So it doesn't say that they are having to decide whether or not they conspired to kill her. It's just criminal conspiracy. So they had to conspire to do something unlawful. It could be covering things up, like when their stories, you know, didn't match up what really happened or anything like that. So that one was a little bit trickier. And the jury did ask Judge Newman to clarify that. So he was able to. The jury deliberated for about 2 hours and 25 minutes before coming back with their verdict.
We, the jury, in the above caption, on the charge of murder of Christina Ann Hanlaney, find the defendant guilty.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
We, the jury, in the above caption case, on the charge of great bodily injury of a child, we find the defendant guilty.
Oh my God!
We, the jury, in the above caption case on the charge of criminal conspiracy, find the defendant not guilty.
Larry's verdict was read next, and he was also found guilty for murder and great bodily injury on a child, and found not guilty for conspiracy. You can hear Rita and her daughter both cry out when the verdict is read that she has been found guilty. She sobs as she's standing there, and her attorney actually puts his hand kind of on her back, trying to comfort her. She sits down in the chair and she is visibly sobbing, and she looks at her daughter in the gallery and she's mouthing to her that she's so sorry. Larry remains more stoic as his verdict is read. He doesn't really seem to react. Although we can't see his face, he never does turn around. He doesn't really seem to have any kind of visible reaction like she did. I'm going to put some photos from the court so that you can see a little bit about how this happened and see the reaction. I will put those on the website. So if you want to check those out on the episode guides at 13thjurorpodcast.com, I will have those up today. After a short recess, they come back and they are ready to do sentencing. During the sentencing part of this part was a little bit frustrating because there are opportunities for different people to speak. So each of the attorneys get to speak, including the solicitor. And there's also a portion where you're able to give victim impact statements. So basically, this is the point where somebody has the opportunity to get up there and be the voice for Christina. And while she had family there, none of them got up to speak on her behalf. They did speak for Rita. Rita had character letters that were given to the judge, and he kind of skimmed through them and read some of them. And she had her daughter stand up and talk, her new husband. She even had a letter from her tax guy, but not one person spoke on behalf of Christina. I will tell you that impacted me probably worse than a lot of the things in this trial did. I thought it was so sad that not only was her death so torturous, her last moments so difficult after a challenging life, but not one person from her family got up to be her voice. And that really affected me. I mentioned that I stream this trial on my YouTube channel, and there's a group of members that have like a chat while it's going. And I asked the members who were in the chat to basically flood the chat with anything to do with her, anything positive or uplifting, anything that you learned about her during the trial, or things that, you know, she liked, or things that mattered, or things that you thought were great about her. And I wanted her to be able to have a voice. And seeing all of the people just pouring out, you know, that she loved donuts and she loved bubbles. Christina loved horses, and Christina had beautiful hair and a beautiful smile. She loved music, and she loved Dora the Explorer, and she loved swimming, and just all of the things that she loved and all of the ways that she made an impact on people. And the chat was flooded with it. I bring this up because even though she didn't have a voice in the courtroom, I think it's important that there is a voice for her. I spent hours after the trial was over, I think I finally finished about maybe 1 or 2 a.m., going back through the chat and trying to get as many of those comments as I could. And I got the first, it's a little over 200 of them, I think, but I put them on a spreadsheet, and I'm going to add that to the website as well, because I think it's really important that even though there was nobody who spoke up for her in the courtroom today, I want there to be somewhere out there to be a voice for Christina, to celebrate her life and to know that she mattered. And that will also be on the 13thjurorpodcast.com. So with no victim impact statements delivered in court, they go straight to the sentencing. Larry doesn't have anybody in his family or anything who comes to speak for him, so his attorney does. He basically says that Larry has been clean and sober for 2 years now. He's still clean and sober today. That he has turned his life around and he is doing well. He has not lived the life of a criminal, and he asks for leniency. For Rita, the judge is given a folder full of letters that are character letters. I'll be honest, the letters were a little bit out of touch with reality because they were asking to find her not guilty or for her to be able to just kind of come home on probation or house arrest. It was not in touch with reality of what's actually happened or what's going on. She had them from everybody to her you know, from coworkers to her family members to even her, like I said, the guy who does her taxes. Y'all remember the daughter that I told you locked her kids in the car and was arrested about a week after Rita was for Christina's death? Well, she comes in and she talks to the judge about wanting leniency for her mother during sentencing.
A family friend of ours, a couple years ago, told me that one day my mom was at Christina's graveyard. I think it was Christina's birthday a couple of years ago. And that she sat in the car and rolled the windows up herself in the heat at the graveyard. Because of how terrible and awful she felt about what happened to my sister. She tortured herself every day. I have to hear her cry every night when I stay with her. She's not been allowed to visit my babies because of this. She already has suffered so much to the point that she rolled herself up in the car just to see what my sister went through. She's not even aware that I know that.
How long did she stay in the car with the windows rolled up?
I never asked, just the thought of it.
She says that her mom locked herself in the car with the windows up to understand what Christina went through in the heat. But she went on Christina's birthday. Christina's birthday is in March. The average high temperature in March in that area is 71 degrees. It was over 90 degrees in August. So it wasn't the same thing. Also, Rita was able to let herself out anytime she wanted to. She goes on to say that her mom never would have done this intentionally and talks about what a good mom she is. Rita's other daughter, who we heard testify, gets up there and she talks to the judge as well. She cries as she says that her mom just made a mistake and she was hanging out with people she shouldn't have been hanging out with. Which, by the way, you know what? Maybe she was. But hanging out with somebody she shouldn't have been hanging out with is not how Christina died, just to be clear. So next up is her new husband. She is recently married and this one was interesting. Listen to what he says to Judge Newman.
My name is Anthony Leisure. I am Rita's husband. Rita has been an inspiration to me, Lord. Sir, he really has. I'm sorry, I'm nervous. She really has. And I pray that you give her leniency and allow her to come home. You know,
when a person is convicted of murder, there's a...
I allow you...
The minimum sentence...
Will you please allow...
The minimum sentence, sir. ...is 30 years. That's the minimum sentence.
Your Honor...
The maximum sentence is life imprisonment.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, when I watched this video, I believed in my heart the car was running and the air conditioner was on. And we hired an attorney, and I watched the second video. And then, all of a sudden... I seen a scene that wasn't in the first video. I seen her going to the car.
Yeah. Well, and I hope you're not here to try to relitigate the case.
No, sir, I'm not.
Because you didn't testify.
Sir.
So we don't need your analysis of the facts of the case.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I asked the court for leniency.
So... Yeah, he called the judge Lord, but then what was crazy is he gets up there and he asks the judge to send her home. And as Judge Newman is trying to explain to him, I can't just send her home. She's been convicted of murder. So the minimum sentence is 30 years. And he basically has no respect for what the judge is saying and just keeps trying to interrupt him and talk over him. And then starts to bring up how there's some hidden scene of the video that shows her. It was just bizarre. So that ended quick and he went and sat down. Her son-in-law and a co-worker both get up and speak to Judge Newman about her as well. And then it comes time for sentencing. Larry is sentenced first. He's given 32 years for the murder of Christina and then 20 years for great bodily harm. Those are to run concurrent with each other, and he does get credit for time served, but he's been out on bond, so that's only a little bit over a month. Rita is sentenced to 37 years for Christina's murder and 20 for great bodily harm. Those are also to be concurrent with each other, and she is also granted time served, but again, that's only about a month. Rita is 53 years old. So 37 years would put her at 90 years old at the end of her sentence. This one was a heavy one. Anything to do with the mistreatment or murder or torture of children just always hits a little bit harder, but especially when it's a special needs child like this who is completely reliant on her mom, the one person who's supposed to take care of her more than anybody else in the world. And it's heartbreaking to know the challenges that she had and the torture that she felt in her last moments. Christina loved bubbles. She loved horses and swimming. She loved SpongeBob and especially Dora the Explorer. She loved the color pink and chocolate donuts and gummy bears. She loved to snuggle and watch TV. She loved balloons and the school bus. Sometime around 2 a.m., when I finally finished the spreadsheet with all of the support and love for Christina, I posted it on my Twitter account. Spreadsheets are one of the things that I'm most known for in the true crime world, and I posted it along with this comment. Of all the spreadsheets I've ever made, this is the most important. Today we watched the sentencing for a mom and her boyfriend who left this sweet girl in a hot car to die a torturous death. Not one person got up to be her voice or speak for her. I asked 13th jurors to flood the chat with love, support, any of her favorite things, or anything they've learned about her during this trial. I spent the last few hours putting the first 200 plus together and could have kept going for another few hours. She may not have had anyone in court speak up for her, but Christina's life mattered. 12 hours later, it has about 40,000 views and counting. And that means the world to me to know that all of these positive things about her are being shared. Christina was a beautiful soul who deserves a voice. As tragic as this was, I'm thankful that justice has been served, and I'm blessed to have been able to witness what a profound impact she had on so many people. That's all for Christina's story. Thank you for reporting to jury duty. I'll see y'all next time.